Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Welcome to another episode of eLaborate Topics. I am your host and leadership mentor, Tywana Wilson. If this is your first time tuning in to eLaborate Topics, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for landing on this podcast. It is a weekly podcast where we give you practical strategies that you can use inside and outside of the laboratory. Myself, along with my two co-hosts, Lona Small and Stephanie Whitehead, bring you our experiences in the laboratory, as well as bringing you amazing guests that also share their experiences in the laboratory. And today is just like no other show. I have another amazing guest who will give us insight into her space, a very different and unique pathway to being a laboratory director. And so I'm excited to bring to you Dr. Tiffany Bratton. So welcome, Dr. Bratton. How are you?
Thanks. I'm excited to be here. I'm well. How are you?
I am doing well. Well, before we kind of jump into it, let me read a little bit about you and share it with our listeners so they can understand how dynamic you are. Dr. Bratton is an award-winning, innovative scientific leader with focused experience in healthcare administration, business strategy, and clinical diagnostics. Dr. Bratton is board certified in clinical chemistry and histocompatibility. She completed her fellowship training at one of the world's leading research universities, Emory University. In 2012, Dr. Bratton began partnering to establish commercial molecular laboratories. She designed, built, validated, and accredited those laboratories, as well as supporting technical sales and marketing. From these experiences, Dr. Bratton learned the value of business strategy, regulatory compliance, and operational excellence to the commercial success of clinical laboratories. In the years that followed, Dr. Bratton provided intermittent consulting support to various laboratory business while maintaining a laser focus on her academic goals. In 2020, Dr. Bratton formed Bratton LabWorks to provide expert guidance for independent specialty diagnostic laboratories that need to evolve and thrive in the years ahead. Didn't I tell you all that we have somebody amazing on today's show? Dr. Bratton, I'm excited.
I'm excited too. I'm really looking forward to this. And thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show. I think it's great.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right into it. And can you share with the listeners or tell them a little bit about your career journey and how did you get to where you are today?
Sure. If we go all the way back to the beginning, I went to graduate school in biochemistry because I literally didn't know what else to do. And so I didn't have the money to go to medical school, and I was looking for a way that I could advance my education, because turns out with a bachelor's degree, you're not really qualified to do much of anything. So I decided to go on to get my PhD. And did that at Emory in biochemistry. And then turns out with a PhD, you're not really qualified to do much of anything either. So then I had to figure out what to do with that. And I knew I didn't want to stay in academia. I wanted to do something more impactful. And so I went to an experimental biology conference, and there were two speakers there talking about laboratory medicine as a career for PhDs. And they were so charismatic, so dynamic, so just excited to be there. And I thought, well, I want to be like them when I grow up. And so I asked them, you know, how to get into the field. And they said, well, if you're at Emory, they have a great program. So I came back and actually knew someone that worked in the pathology department at Emory. So they helped me get my foot in the door, and I got a clinical chemistry fellowship. Did that for 2 years. And during that fellowship, one of my rotations was in histocompatibility. It was a 2-week rotation. And they said I was the only clinical chemistry fellow they'd had rotate who didn't run out screaming the first day. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoy histocompatibility because it's just as much art as it is science. I think a lot of times in core lab, things are very black and white. And in histocompatibility, it's not that way. There's definitely things that are open to interpretation. So I really enjoyed it. So I stayed and did another 2-year fellowship in histocompatibility. And having those two kind of equal backgrounds, I've been able to bounce back and forth between the two, or sometimes even combine the two in the field. So I really got to where I am completely by accident. None of it was planned.
Wow. And usually medical laboratory professionals say that same thing, that they got into it by chance. They went to a conference, they heard somebody. So this is why it's important, all of the lab professionals and pathologists and laboratory directors out there, to share your excitement, because somebody like Dr. Bratton might be sitting in the audience, or Tywana Wilson could be sitting in the audience looking for what is the next move for us. So I think that's important that you shared that. And I think that's so interesting that you just so happened to have been at that right place, hearing the right information to get you in this field.
Absolutely. And I'll be forever grateful to those two clinical chemists that showed up at that meeting, because it was not a clinical chemistry meeting, but they showed up and they changed a life that day. So,
wow. That's awesome. So whoever you are out there, you changed a life. And for that, the everybody in the industry is grateful, because as we know, it seems like it doesn't matter what level you are at, getting people to come into our industry takes work, and it starts with each of us. So Dr. Bratton, I know you've had the opportunity to be able to build, design, validate, accredit different labs along your journey. Can you talk to us a little bit about the skills or education that helped you succeed with these projects?
Well, I mean, building a laboratory, it's really fundamentally about complying with CLIA and any other accrediting agency that you're going to work with. And so obviously the scientific and technical knowledge that I got throughout my training was incredibly important. But I think equally as important, I come from a long line of CPAs and entrepreneurs. I'm the first one that's done something kind of scientific in my family. And so I learned early on how to understand money and how to understand business and strategy. And that really helps me understand the business of the lab. So in terms of building a lab from the ground up, I can tell you it's about process. You have to process map it to death. Otherwise, you're going to have all kinds of gaps after go live, and that's going to cause fires that you need to put out. And it's invariably the front end and the back end that always gets everybody. The actual, you know, we've got a sample and we're going to produce a result. That part is very technical, and there are a lot of people that know how to do that part. It's the front end of how do we get kits out? How do we design requisitions? How do we make a process that people can submit samples? And then it's the back end of how do we get these reports out in a meaningful way? And how do we get paid? I mean, that's the part people always forget, is how are we actually going to get paid for this work?
Yeah, that's important. And I think you bring up a great point, is that we do have a lot of people that know the technical pieces, that middle piece, how do we get a result? But sometimes that front end piece of that marketing, that back end piece of the billing, how are we going to get paid and all of that, sometimes those pieces are missing from the equation. So I think that was a good point. So how did you really start to key in on those skills of learning? Like, Did you have a mentor in that regard, or did you take classes? Like, how did you learn those things?
Mine was unfortunately trial and error. I mean, I can tell you, I know all of the ways to do it incorrectly. And I've learned over time the ways to avoid doing it incorrectly and hopefully get closer to the correct way to do it. So for me, it was all trial and error. I think if people are interested in that, there are a lot of resources out there. I mean, I know there are constant webinars now on laboratory billing. Every lab medicine conference I've been to in the past year has had a session on billing. I think that's really coming to the forefront now, especially with a lot of MACs being in the MolDX territory and having to deal with those issues. So I think there are a lot of resources for the back end. For the front end, I still think that, unfortunately, there's a lot of trial and error involved in that. It depends on the type of lab. It depends on the type of client. It depends on the geography. So a lot of that still has to be done trial and error, or by someone really experienced. But I think that there are definitely people out there that can mentor anyone that's interested in that.
Got it. So those webinars and mentorship and just really getting yourself that knowledge and education. So as I was thinking about your background and thinking about your experience, so I know that you are board certified in clinical chemistry and histocompatibility. Most people know what clinical chemistry is, but they may not know what histocompatibility is. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that is, and even thinking about how would somebody even get exposure to it or get into it if they were interested?
So histocompatibility is essentially matching organ donors and recipients. The histocompatibility laboratory does all of the testing, primarily on recipients, because they have to be monitored throughout the time that they're on the wait list for a transplant, but also on donors at the time that someone converts to being a donor, having to get the HLA type and all of the other testing done that's required federally for someone to become an organ donor. And the histocompatibility lab typically does all of that, or at least manages all of that. And I would say that the histocompatibility laboratory probably gives you a sense of being closer to patients than any other aspect of the lab. And that's simply because we monitor people sometimes for years. And so you get used to seeing the same patient names coming up again and again. You're very intimately aware of their story and anything that happens to them from a procedure standpoint to keep track of any sensitizing events. So you become really kind of engrossed in some patients. And then when it's their turn to get a transplant, you feel this real sense of accomplishment of having been involved in that. So I think it's good that you bring this up, because it's really difficult to get HLA techs. There aren't a lot of people that have that knowledge and experience. And it can take a long time to learn it. But right now, HLA labs, histocompatibility labs, are really hurting for staff. So I think if anybody is interested and wants to learn more about HLA and wants to have that kind of impact on patients' lives, I think this is a great time. HLA labs need help, and they're willing to train.
Wow, that's awesome. And I know that with your skill set and your unique education, that there weren't a lot of HLA lab directors that were out there. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, since it's such a niche kind of area, like how many experts are there from a laboratory director standpoint that has this special knowledge and expertise?
So not enough. I can tell you there are somewhere between 220 and 250 histocompatibility labs in North America, and there are not enough lab directors to go around to all of those centers. So there are many histocompatibility lab directors that oversee multiple labs. We travel a lot. I travel a lot going around to different laboratories. And a number of histocompatibility directors are set to retire here in the next 5 to 10 years. So there's going to be an even bigger gap to fill. So there definitely are not, I can't give you a number, but there are not a lot of people in the field. It's a very small field. And so, you know, I think if there's anyone out there that's interested in becoming an HLA lab director, one of the requirements is you have to have a PhD. So I know a lot of HLA techs that have gone back to school to get their PhD to become an HLA lab director. And then you have to do a 4-year fellowship in immunology, with 2 of those years being specifically in the HLA clinical field.
Got it. I'm happy that you mentioned that, because sometimes as we think about different opportunities in the clinical laboratory, you know, techs think maybe the ceiling is limited. And sometimes people say, well, I guess my next step, if I want to oversee a laboratory, would be if I have to go to medical school and I have to go to pathologist track, right? And so it's important that you mention that yes, you do have to have a PhD. So that's another route or pathway that mm-hmm. you can go with the specialized training. So for those of mm-hmm. you that are out there that, you know, are interested, this is another opportunity to still stay in the clinical laboratory and yet have a different kind of an impact in our profession. So I think that was great that you mentioned that. And so, and it makes me think that, you know, that's another opportunity in the lab that I myself didn't even think about. And I'm sure there are other laboratorians that are not necessarily thinking about these options, because let's face it, you don't know what you don't know. And so it could be perceived that career options are limited in the field. Do you feel like that is the case?
So in some ways, yes, but in other ways, no. I feel like if you have a very narrow view of the lab field, like I'm going to work in a lab on the bench, then that can sometimes put a ceiling, because there are not very many leadership roles that are actually in the lab. But that said, I think that's the case in most fields. If you have a very narrow scope, a very narrow focus, it's going to be difficult to advance beyond a certain level. But for those of us who are lifelong learners and want to continually grow, it's often necessary to grow outwards and not just upwards. You mentioned earlier that I work with technical sales and marketing. I was never trained in marketing. When I first started working with them cross-functionally, I had no idea what they were talking about half the time. But I learned and I grew. And this comes back around to, you know, the individual interests of people in the lab. The lab is intrinsically a cross-functional space. And if you want to grow and you have an interest in research and development, or you have an interest in sales or in tech support, you may have to change companies, you may have to change geography, you may have to stretch out of your comfort zone, but there are definitely a lot of opportunities for people with our scientific and medical expertise.
That's awesome. I mean, that's great, great that you mentioned that. So I'm just going to ask you, do you still enjoy the field now as much as you did when you stumbled upon it and heard about it in that lecture?
So I'm going to be brutally honest with you. From the time that I started my PhD going all the way back, I've never liked it. Like I've never liked what I did. I got into it because I was good at it, not because I particularly enjoyed it. In fact, when I finished up grad school, I had a colleague who was finishing up the same time, and he did his PhD in elephant behavior. And I just looked at him and I was like, I wish I had known that that was an option, because I might have done my work in elephant behavior and gone to live in Bali. Like I could see myself doing that. But the reality is, I've never really liked kind of the box that I feel like I'm in, which is kind of why I've grown outward and not upward, because I'm interested in a lot of different things. And I think if I had something to say for the field that I enjoy, it would be that there are a lot of different things that I can do. I've learned marketing. I've learned sales. I've learned business strategy. I've learned finance. You know, I've done a lot of different things. And it's because I'm in this field that I've had those opportunities.
Awesome. I love that, looking outward and not necessarily inward of that box, because so many times people look at what they know. I'm in the hospital lab and I know routine chemistry, hematology, blood bank. And so this is all I know. And looking at that ceiling with the limited leadership roles, it can be limited. But I love that. Look outward and think about other ways that you can still use your expertise and do something different, learn something different. So I love that. Thinking about, since you've been in, I know you've had a lot of impactful moments of working in the laboratory and healthcare space. You want to talk to us about one of those moments that you've had? Because I'm sure you've had many in your scope of work.
Well, yeah, and histocompatibility, and I think in the lab in general, to me, every day is impactful. One of the most fundamental things that I was taught in my training is that every sample is someone's life. That's an actual person, someone's mom, someone's son, someone's friend, whose life you're impacting directly in some way. And that may only be that they have to stay home because they have asymptomatic COVID, but that's still an impact. And who knows, you may save someone's life by limiting exposure. So I would say the next time you see that swab or that tube of blood or that sample of any kind, instead of looking at it as a number, which we often do, right? It's an accession number. Instead of looking at it as a number, look at it as a person who's counting on you to make the right call. And then I think every day is impactful.
I like it. So every day, as we know, the work that we do makes a difference, but think of it that way, that every day is impactful. Dr. Bratton, the medical laboratory team has been pushed to their limits, as you know, during the COVID-19 crisis and today afterwards, and with monkeypox and everything else is emerging and coming out. I mean, the team has been pushed beyond capacity, and recruitment and retention of qualified personnel are becoming challenging, even as you mentioned, in such a specialized area of HLA that histocompatibility, that you're willing to train people, right? If you have an interest for learning, willing to train, and people are retiring here in the next several years. I'm interested to hear your perspective about any strategies that you might have to help with this recruitment and retention of team members.
Well, I'm going to say the thing that nobody wants to hear. You have to pay people what they're worth. And I see all of these things on LinkedIn about how to recognize employees and make them feel valued. And I think the way to make people feel valued is to actually pay them. I mean, it's been shown time and again in the data that compensation is the number one driver. And nobody ever wants to hear that. But I think lab staff have been underpaid for a long time. And now's the time to change it. Because you know who doesn't have recruitment and retention problems? The people that are paying above market.
Makes sense. There are some, and I think of, I'm here in Ohio, and I do think of some employers who routinely pay above market, and I'm sure they are, you know, are short, but I think they still have that name and recognition, at least in our area, of being one of the higher paid organizations. So people want to work there, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. You know, even the people that pay are sometimes short. And I think that just speaks to a lack of new people entering the field. And I think that we as a laboratory community need to take responsibility for getting the word out there that this is a career path, because when I went to that conference, I had never heard of it. Like, it had never occurred to me that hospital laboratories needed staff. I don't know why it had never occurred to me, but it hadn't. And so I think that there are just, you know, we need to get into the colleges and the high schools and places like this, and, you know, let people know that this is a career opportunity and it's a good one. I mean, I think this is a great one for people to get into, but it's just not as advertised as other things. And I think there are some organizations, I think AACC is doing a really nice job of getting, you know, publicity and advocacy for the laboratory medicine community. And I'm sure there are other organizations doing the same thing, but I think we definitely need more exposure.
Absolutely. So do you have any like creative strategies? Because I sit on several committees with some of the big lab groups, ASVP and ASCLS. And one of the things that always comes out is, okay, we know we need people, right? We know we need to recruit and retain. So what kind of strategies can we do? So sitting around the table often with other leaders in other parts of the country, it's always interesting to hear people's perspectives of, you know, some of their strategies. So I'm interested to hear your perspective, especially as you work with different laboratories too, and have different insight of working with multiple locations.
Well, one of the things that I've found to be useful in recruiting and even retaining to some degree is bringing in people that have little to no experience. And not everyone has the luxury of doing that. But if you're willing to train and you're willing to nurture people, I think that one, they're trained the way you want them to be, but two, you have some loyalty from that person because of the opportunity that you've given them. And so, you know, I know a lot of hospital labs and even a lot of private labs are like, oh, we have to have a med tech. And in some states, that's true, a licensed med tech. But in other places, you can bring folks in and start training them and put them on the path to becoming a med tech. And I think that that's one way to get people into the field. And then, you know, I think just a grassroots movement, like I said, at the high school level and the college level to say, hey, this is a career path. Everybody has to start somewhere. And so I think getting people early on is a good way to recruit people into the field.
Absolutely. I think that's a good way of looking at it, and looking at it that, you know, maybe you don't get the people that got a ton of experience. Maybe you go with those people who are still excited or looking for that opportunity. Maybe it's somebody that has a biology or zoology or genetics degree, and you put them on the pathway. So I know here in Ohio, that is what we have done, is getting people that maybe have a biology degree, but for whatever reason, they're not really interested in going to the medical laboratory science program. You know, maybe they have a family, maybe they can't commit to full-time study, but because I am in a state that is not licensed, they do meet the requirements via CLIA to be on that pathway of, you know, performing in a technical way. And so that was one of the things that you might find more and more organizations starting to do. Look at those people that have biology and genetics and, you know, other scientific degrees whereas alone by themselves, a biology degree, a BS in biology, your options might be limited, right? And, you know, with just that degree. And so instead of having them work in our processing department or, you know, as phlebotomists, we have taken an interest in having them be on the pathway and hopefully attain some sort of certification via a non-traditional pathway. So I think that was important that you mentioned that, in that you have to be creative, and especially if you are in a state that's not licensure, which is the majority of states are not licensed, you have an opportunity to be creative in getting interest into your labs.
Yeah, and I do think that's important, because I don't know how many, you know, structured med tech programs you're aware of in your area. I know of two. There are a lot fewer, I think, than there used to be, and I'm not sure why that's the case. But you're right. Sometimes there's not one close by. Sometimes people have life circumstances where they just can't do that. And I think it's important to recognize that there are people out there with a biology degree that are good workers and fast learners, and you can definitely put them on the right path to get into this industry.
Absolutely. So when you think about skills-based training or education, do you think it would be helpful for those looking to move from the bench to other levels of authority, meaning that sometimes people come into the industry, they're a tech, and they always feel like, well, if I go and get another degree or another certification, that is the golden nugget for the next step. And we know that that's not always true. People are sitting on master's degrees and PhDs every day that it has not opened up doors like they thought it would. And so what would you say or recommend for somebody that may say, hey, I want to do something else, whether it's in leadership or sales or any marketing, what kind of skills-based training or, you know, education, not necessarily formal education, that would be helpful for somebody?
Well, I found that Coursera, and you know, not that I want to promote them, but I found that Coursera has a lot of great courses with practical application. There are some on there about the finances of healthcare and things of that nature that I think are very useful. And I think regardless of what direction you want to grow in, that can be a good resource. But I think the most important thing is if you want to grow in a certain direction, I saw this on a TED talk earlier, so I don't want to take credit for it, but you're not going to be able to move up in an organization without a sponsor. So what you have to do is you have to find someone that's doing what you want to do, someone that you can admire and seek to emulate. And this comes back around to having a mentor. And I don't know that it needs to be a formal mentor. I don't have any formal mentors, but I have a lot of people that I admire and look up to and that I've learned from and been able to pick up skills from over the years. And so I think, you know, you can do the classes, you can do formal education, but like you said, even with a master's or a PhD, if you don't have someone that can help you grow within an organization, you're not going to get very far because there are lots of people that have a master's or a PhD. And what you need is someone to put you forward and say, I've worked with this person. They're eager to learn. They're a hard worker. Let's look at this person.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So even though you said you didn't want to recommend or say for Coursera, I think it's important for our listeners to know. So some of you may not know that is a free resource. Actually, it's an online, I like to call it a university that has tons of courses on there. Whatever courses you want or looking for, they have tons of courses on there. Some of them you can go for credits and some of them you can just audit. But I think it's a great resource because here at Elaborate Topics, we are about giving you resources that you can use. So go check it out. It's a great resource to get some of that practical insight, that practical learning. And Dr. Bratton also mentioned about TED Talks. There are TED Talks about all kind of topics. So I think those are another great way for you to get, you know, even those small doses of inspiration and motivation. So, you know, check out the TED Talks as well. And I love that you mentioned about having a mentor, whether it's formal or informal, but most importantly, having a sponsor. It's important to have somebody speaking up for you, even when you're not in the room. So sponsorship is key. And a lot of this starts with getting into rooms that other people are in. So don't always go to lunch by yourself. Don't always do the same thing you've always done, because that could be limiting your opportunity for exposure and moving to the next level in your particular career path. So I thought
Well, I think I think an important thing for people in our industry, because there are some people that have no problem speaking up. There are some people that are naturally extroverted for sure, but I think a lot of lab folks tend to be more on the introverted side. And I know that I am for sure. And what I've found to be important is just speaking up. Like if you're in a room and you have a thought, just say it. You know, I think that some people are afraid, oh, that might be stupid, or oh, that won't be taken seriously. But you would be surprised. I have said a lot of really stupid things and people be like, oh, that's a great idea, or that's a great point. So, you know, if you have a thought about something that's being discussed, then definitely speak up and say it. And I think that's important, like you said, for getting out there and getting people to recognize that you have input and you can contribute.
I think that is a great point. Our time is almost coming to a close, but I do want to leave it with a fun, Alfred, kind of a fun question before we wrap up today. And so I'm going to ask this because you've had such a wide variety of experience, but if there was a book written about you, what would the title be and why?
So I think I would call my book, and I've had a few book titles over the years, to be honest with you, but the most recent one is Out of Ring. And there's two reasons behind that. One is that every storm runs out of rain. And I have faced a lot of challenges throughout my life, throughout my career. And I'm sure everybody else has. Nobody walks an easy path. And so I always try to remind myself when I'm in the depths of despair that every storm runs out of rain. And so the second part of that is what comes after the rain. And usually that's a rainbow, right? Something beautiful, something worthwhile. And so you have to remember, if you can just get through the storm, you'll be able to see why it was all worth it. So it would be Out of Rain.
I love it. That was awesome. Thank you for playing along with me on that one. But Out of Rain, I think that's insightful. And I think that's great because you're right. We all have a bestseller in us. And at some points of our lives, the titles are serious. And some points of our lives, it's inspirational. And at some points of our lives, it may be a downright nightmare. But
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, it's what makes us who we are. So Dr. Bratton, how can the listeners get and stay connected with you and follow you on your journey? They're like, yes, I'm sitting on my PhD right now, or I'm sitting on my master's degree right now. And what she said, it just resonated with me. So how can people get and stay connected with you?
So the best way to connect with me is on LinkedIn. It's TK Bratton, PhD, is my handle on LinkedIn. I am in there all the time. So if you send me a note through there or a connection request, I will definitely connect.
Awesome. So listeners, as we always say, you need to get on LinkedIn. Everybody's on LinkedIn. So get on LinkedIn and make sure you connect with Dr. Bratton. Dr. Bratton, this was fun.
Yeah, this was fun. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming and sharing with the audience. I know that when they hear this podcast, I know they're going to be impacted by it and they're going to think differently. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that I'm able to touch someone the way I was touched during that conference. So hopefully someone out there will hear this and be inspired.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, listening audience, for listening to this episode of Elaborate Topics Podcast, where I am your host, Tywana Wilson, and I had the pleasure of talking with Dr. Tiffany Bratton of LabWorks. So here's the thing, as I say, please share this message out. I say it week after week after week, share it out with somebody who could benefit from listening to this podcast. We have over 115 episodes out there on directimpactbroadcasting.com, or you can find it on your favorite podcast platform. So thank you, my friends. And until next week, where we have another show with another amazing guest talking about another topic that you need, have an amazing day.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.